This is an ABC podcast.
Live across Victoria.
On ABC Listen.
Your smart speaker.
And on your radio.
This is 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
The conversations that are important to you.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Margaret Paul.
Buckle up, Victoria. Premier Jacinta Allen is facing a potential leadership challenge this morning, just 4 months out from a state election. You've been hearing about that with RAF, and in the news this morning, the Premier's just been informed she's lost the support of the caucus, with Ben Carroll asked to nominate for the position of party leader. We'll keep you up to date with anything that comes out of that today. As you've been hearing across the morning, it's kind of happening. It's what's going on. And we'll speak to an expert about how we got here and what happens next. But most of all, I want to hear from you. What does a potential change of leader mean for you? Does it make you more or less likely to vote for Labor in November? I'm Margaret Paul, filling in for Mary Guerin on The Conversation Hour. Also today, a popularity contest of a different kind. Do you have a favourite tree? Maybe it's a tree you walk past regularly, a tree from your childhood. Maybe it's a tree you've had the heartbreak of seeing cut down. What makes a favourite tree? You call in and tell me, and tell me what is your favourite tree. I've got one. I might tell you about it a bit later. And coming up a bit later in the show, have you heard of hygiene poverty? New research shows about 1 in 5 Australians have skipped buying hygiene or cleaning products in the past year because they can't afford them. What can be done to stop that? But first of all, coming up, what does a leadership challenge in state politics mean for you on The Conversation Hour?
This is The Conversation Hour with Margaret Paul.
Well, you've been hearing about it on the news and this morning with RAF. Cabinet was meant to be meeting this morning. We're not quite sure if that's happening, but it is you, the voters, who will decide when we go to the polls in November. So what does this news of a potential spill in Victoria's Parliament in the Labor Party, how does that news land with you? Does it change your vote? Joining us now is Dr. Zare Gazarian, who's Associate Professor of Politics at Monash University. Good morning.
Good morning. Good to be with you.
It's a busy morning. Now, I want to know, first of all, Labor's been in power in Victoria since Daniel Andrews first won in 2014. So it's been a pretty settled time in state politics on the Labor side, but it seems to be changing. So what's changed in that time? What's happened?
Well, it's been a remarkable decade for the Labor Party in Victoria. Arguably, they have been a model party in government. They have reduced all sorts of internal disquiet, especially during the Andrews years. And that's why today it's so important to be focused on the Labor Party, because that all seems to have unravelled so very quickly. And what we see now is a party really in a full-blown leadership crisis. And this isn't going to go away in the next 24 hours. You'd think this is something that's going to linger and may potentially have a huge impact on the party's performance at the election due in late November.
A full-blown leadership crisis is how we're hearing about it this morning. When Jacinta Allen took over from Daniel Andrews, that was in 2023 when Daniel Andrews stood down. You say it's been a settled time over that period, but were there signs of this back then in 2023?
There were signs, and we could see how when Daniel Andrews resigned from the premiership, the idea was that there'd be an orderly transition to Jacinta Allen. But what some reports showed was that there was a bit of disquiet, and that Ben Carroll back then also had flirted with the idea of putting his hand up and standing for the party leadership. But that was very quickly shot down by the former Premier, and the party moved on very quickly. And so that suggests to us this has been lingering on for some time, and it hasn't gone away. And what we have now, of course, is Jacinta Allen taking a reportedly an incredible step of informing the Labor Party organisation that she is ready to stand if there is to be a challenge on her leadership.
Amazing. That letter that was sent this morning, just reminding people of what the process is, how it has to work if this challenge goes ahead. I want to hear from you, the voters. How does this land with you? Does this change what's likely to be your vote in the poll in November? We've got Dr. Zare Ghazari, an Associate Professor of Politics at Monash University, joining us in the studio now. He's just come off air. Raf Epstein.
I just wanted to finish off on something. Cabinet's going ahead at 11:15.
Well, that's in 5 minutes.
That's right. Cabinet's going ahead. Wherever you're listening across Victoria, welcome. The three ministers who were part of that delegation, so Anthony Carbines, Gabrielle Williams and Ingrid Stitt, they went to the Premier and said, look, your time is up. The Premier said, well, and so? Cabinet's going ahead. I think she asked them to resign. The other issue is that the Premier's allies are clear. She's digging in. The quote was, "They might be headless. They might be faceless men, but actually they're headless chooks." They do not. That was the line, and that's it's said in jest, but it's meant to convey a point. They don't think this coup and this plot has been organised. They don't think the people who are saying these things to the Premier have the authority of their faction. I won't get into the ins and outs of that. They think this can be stared down. So Cabinet's going ahead at 11:15. The three ministers who I mentioned earlier, people like Ingrid Stitt and Gabrielle Williams, they were my important swing votes in the Cabinet. That's my guess, my estimation. That's not enough. The left is the dominant faction in this Labor government. The left have not given authority to those people. The Premier is defying that delegation. That's all I have for you now.
Defiant. Hey, Raf, can you tell us this Cabinet meeting, is it to do with, will they be discussing this leadership challenge or is it business as usual? It's going to be pretty awkward.
I tried to track that down. You're not supposed to talk in Cabinet about this stuff, but I'm not sure how you avoid it. It certainly wouldn't be on the agenda, right, because the Premier is still the Premier and she controls the agenda. I don't know. And, like, are those three ministers going to turn up to the Cabinet? I don't know. So I don't know the answers to that. Premier's ploughing on. Those three people don't have the authority of the faction. The dominant faction is the left. The Premier has her position because of the left.
Yes.
She's charging on.
Raf, will you come back and let us know if anything changes? Thank you so much. I love it when Raf just wanders into the studio and gives us a live update. That's amazing. That's what happens on the show today. We've got Dr. Zare Ghazarian, who's Associate Professor of Politics at Monash University. What I really want to know is whether or not the spill or the challenge or whether there's a change of leadership, we're 4 months out from a state election. What's this likely to have an impact on voter perception, Dr. Ghazari? And we're really close to an election here, aren't we? What are voters likely to make of all this?
Yes, I think this is the somewhat shocking thing at the moment, that Labor would have been looking at what the Liberal Party has gone through in recent years. We've seen throughout the last 10 or so years, the coalition has been in leadership turmoil from periods, and they've chopped and changed leaders, and every time we've seen that there's that leadership instability, voters drift away from the party in question. And so for Labor to be doing this right now, it's so very risky, because voters do not respond well to leadership speculation. They don't want the party to be talking about themselves. They don't want parties to be focused on who's going to lead them or who's not going to lead them. They want parties to come in with a program and get on with the job of governing. So this is going to reflect very badly on the Labor Party. And from what we've heard as well, with those reports that some ministers have expressed their dissatisfaction but refused to step down, really is something that we're getting into uncharted territory, because it is an expectation that if ministers are unable to publicly support the leader or support the decisions of Cabinet, then they ought to step down or be dismissed by the Premier. So this is a real test of leadership. This is a real test of structures and processes right now.
And the people who are going to decide the outcome of that test, of course, are the voters. I'm really keen to hear from you in all of this. What do you make of it? What does this do to your vote? We've got David in Sunbury who joins us now to share your observations. David, tell us, what do you make of what's going on in state politics today?
Well, just what normally goes on in state politics when a leader needs to move on. They're stuck with They're stuck with one leader who was really the was put in by Dan Andrews. We need a new leadership group in the Labor Party. I've voted Labor since the 1980s, and that's how long I voted for them. And I won't be voting for them if Jacinda Allen is the Premier. And I think there's a lot of people that feel the same way. We're not sure who we're going to vote for, but we won't be going for Labor.
And will you vote for Labor if they change the leader?
I'm more likely to vote for Labor if they change the leader. I think there needs to be a royal commission into the big build. Jacinda Allen has been on a lot of TV talkback shows, including the 7:30 report, and the answers she gave were weak and certainly nothing that you would expect from a leader. So I think she should do the right thing and move on and let someone else come in and take over and let the Labor Party have a fresh start, at least a partially fresh start.
Well, they're up against it in terms of that deadline. Thank you so much, David, for calling in and it's so good to hear from the voters about what you think of it. We've got Daniel in Broadmeadows who joins us now. Daniel, what do you make of it?
I think that this is something that's been a long time coming. I agree with David, the answers around the controversies and everything have not been sufficient. And, yeah, I think it won't change my vote necessarily. I'm still likely to vote for Labor, but I'm thinking this will get more, Labor supporters that have been offside back into the fold. And I think that, with the Premier having all the baggage around the big build and also even the Commonwealth Games, she was the Minister for the Commonwealth Games, that's all just, it's just all built up too much. And I don't think there's been enough effort to combat that negative perception. I don't think there's been enough strength shown. I think Daniel Andrews was always showing a lot of strength in his leadership. Mm. I remember early on in his leadership, he was letting ministers go when they did something so much as had their pets chauffeured around in a car. He was like, that person's gone. I don't think Jacinta Allen has been firm or strong enough in her leadership.
Thank you very much for your call, Daniel. James joins us in Dalesford. James, what do you make of today's goings-on in state politics?
Look, I'm just staggered by it all. I've been pushing my local member to encourage a leadership change for a while because, as far as I can see, the Labor government wouldn't be re-elected with her in charge. I've supported Labor for years, so I'm certainly not coming for the right. But and I think the intransience was one of the words I used about her. But what prompted me to ring you was just this thing she's done with the letter and saying, I'm not going anywhere and you've got to do this. That she'll go down in history as the Tony Abbott of the Labor Party. This idea that I would rather blow up the train than change and to let someone else take over is just appalling. And she should be doing a Keir Starmer. She should be saying, OK, for the good of the government and the good of the party and the good of the Victoria, I'll go because, I won't bore you with the list of things I've got I don't like about her, but she's not going to get elected. And that's what I've been worried about for a long time is that, Victoria can't afford to have another LNP government. Every time we have one, it's a disaster.
Thank you, James. Thanks for your call. It's so interesting. Dr. Zara Gazarian is joining us from Monash University, Associate Professor of Politics. You described Dr. Gazarian earlier. This is a bit of a risky move, but the talkback callers we've been hearing from today are quite, they're not as worried as you seem to be about the risk of losing a bit of paint when it comes to leadership spills. I'm so interested to hear from you, hear from people more about what you make of this. But Dr. Gazarian, what's been the role of opinion polls in all of this? Because we've seen those change quite a bit in the last kind of, 6 to 12 months or so.
They have, and we've seen since Daniel Andrews' departure, really, the Labor Party hasn't been able to hit the same highs with Jacinta Allen as leader. We've seen a swing in terms of the primary vote, and looking at some published polls, such as the one in The Age, for example, compared to others, the general trend is that Labor has been losing support, and it on face value, you'd think it would make good news for the coalition, but that's not really the case either, because the coalition has also been losing support, according to some polls. So the support has been going on to other parties. The chief winner there is One Nation. Now, the test is whether people will, on election day or the days leading up to election day, actually vote for One Nation. That's yet to be tested at a general election in Victoria. We've seen, of course, hints of that at a by-election, but as a general population, that's to be that's untested. And the other feature of the polls that we've seen as well, in terms of personal popularity, again, Jacinta Allen just has never been able to achieve the same levels of highs that Daniel Andrews has. So Victorians haven't responded to her in a positive way from the start.
Such an interesting question, that role of people's personal brand. On the other side of politics, the Liberal Party had their own spill 6 months ago and they elected a new leader in Jess Wilson. Do you think spills play differently with voters on different sides of politics? Does it affect voters in a different way when it's on the Liberal Party side or the Labor Party side of politics?
I think for the Liberal Party side, there were real divisions that had emerged, and they were very visible in the public sphere. And when we saw, I think at the end of last year, Jess Wilson come up as the new leader, that was a bit of a shock as well, because, again, looking at polls, it didn't look as though the Liberal Party was doing too badly. But since her arrival, there has been a bit of a bounce for the coalition. So that, now in hindsight, looks to have been a very good move by the party to bring in Jess Wilson. And of course, timing plays something in politics, doesn't it? We've seen now Jess Wilson really be on the front foot, confronting a premier and really a government that seems to be facing a real it's time factor, and the challenges of policies such as infrastructure, of course, we've talked about the big build, state debt, and the big issue of crime that seems to be really at the top of the agenda and has yet been a real challenge and a struggle for the party to try and get on top of. So these are lingering things that any government that's been in power for over 10 years would expect to be confronting. But it seems, for voters at least, that they're unconvinced about how this government has gone about trying to get on top of these issues.
I'm so glad that you brought up some of those policy issues as well, because we've been talking about what voters make of it, but I think those policy issues, I'm really glad that you brought that up with us. That's Dr. Zara Ghazarian, who's Associate Professor in Politics at Monash University. Thank you so much for joining us on what I imagine is a very busy day for you.
It's a very busy day. Pleasure to be with you, though.
Hey, can we get you back on if we need to as things change?
Of course. Of course. I look forward to it.
I've got a couple of text messages I'll just read out. We've got people saying, describing today's situation as deck chairs on the Titanic, and another text talking about Victorian state politics as pathetic. There is no competent party. All sides are underperforming and overpriced. I hope Labor are enjoying the Commonwealth Games, a little dig we heard earlier about the role of the Commonwealth Games. So, yes, let us know what you make of Victoria in state politics. But coming up, a vote of a different kind. I want to know about your favourite tree.
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Margaret Paul.
Do you have a favourite tree? Maybe it's a tree you remember climbing as a kid, a magic faraway tree type thing where you can get all the way up to the top and get to a different world perhaps. Or maybe it's one you walk past or underneath daily or often or drive past. I have a favourite tree. It's an elm tree that has a beautiful light when you run underneath it on that running track that goes around Princess Park in Carlton. And I think it actually makes you run a little bit faster when you run underneath it. Apparently, Melbourne's most popular tree is another elm tree on Punt Road just near the Yarra. Victorians are being asked to nominate their favourite tree for the 2026 Tree of the Year competition. So why don't you call or text and let us know what is your favourite tree and why? I'm joined now by Catherine Masulanis, who's the environmental advocate with the National Trust of Victoria. Good morning, Catherine.
Good morning, Margaret. Lovely to chat to you.
You too. Do you have a favourite tree?
I have many favourite trees, of course. There is one that springs to mind, which is it's an oak in Vermont. It's actually a group of three or four trees all together, and the canopy joins up into one enormous green umbrella.
Oh, the leafy east of Melbourne, there'd be a few popular trees out that way, I reckon.
Definitely. Although we get nominations from all over Victoria, and it's always wonderful seeing all the different trees that come in from everywhere in the state.
Yeah, I noticed having a look back through some of the past winners, there have been quite a few in regional Victoria. But first I want to know, tell us, why do you run this competition? Why do you want to know about Victoria's favourite trees? What's in it for the trees? What's in it for them?
The glory, mainly. we run this competition every year to celebrate Victoria's fabulous trees. So they're something, they can't speak for themselves, but I think they are an important part of many people's days and in many people's lives. So it's that thing of being able to celebrate them, see the diversity of species we have in Victoria. And also the thing underneath that, I guess, is that at the National Trust, we're really long-term advocates for the protection of trees in general, but especially our significant trees. And the competition helps to highlight the fact that we don't have that kind of protection, legal protection, as yet for our trees.
That's so interesting. And I'm fairly sure that the Yarra River, the Birrarung, has recently, in the past few years, secured legal protection. So it's interesting to hear that you're pushing for the same kinds of protection for trees. I'd love to hear, call in, text in, let us know, is there an important tree in your life? Maybe it's a tree. Tell us where it is. Tell us why it's important to you, what it's meant to you, because we know trees are a really important part of the stories of our life. They're where we spend a lot of time as kids. Maybe you got married underneath a favourite tree, or it's a perfect picnic spot. I'd love to know from you all about your favourite trees. Catherine, we're joined by Catherine Mazialanis, who's the environmental advocate with the National Trust of Victoria. Tell us, what is it that you want to hear from Victorians? Do you want those personal stories, or is it more about the environmental aspects, bird sightings, possum holes, that kind of things? What do you want to hear from Victorians?
Well, definitely personal stories, but I guess when we classify trees, and we classify, you know, the best of the best, it's not just about their environmental impact, although of course that is important, and of course the provision of canopy is so important, particularly at the moment. But we also classify on the basis of, you know, their social importance, on the basis of their historical importance. So it might be that, you know, there was some great shootout that happened underneath it back in, you know, the 1800s, or, you know, it might be we last year classified a fabulous tree in Bendigo, the Bodhi tree, which is a sapling of the tree under which Buddha received enlightenment.
Wow.
So the tree itself is not a huge tree, but so much social significance. So it can be anything, but we want to hear all of those stories.
Because I think what we found last year is that that recognition of being Victoria's favourite tree can actually bring a bit of protection. That Algerian oak that was facing removal in the path of the transmission lines in Western Victoria, that won, I think that was the one that won last year, wasn't it? And then was saved.
We hope it's saved.
Oh, okay, I don't want to prematurely save the tree.
So, yes, it won Tree of the Year. There was enormous community support for this particular tree. It stands by the creek in Kingston, not the suburb of Kingston, the town. It's a gorgeous old tree, and by a Cobb and Co bridge. And, yes, it was under threat of removal for transmission lines. Within about 3 days of it being announced as Tree of the Year, the infrastructure company said, you know, we've heard how strongly the community feels about this tree. We are looking at ways to save it.
Wow.
You know? So we're not quite sure what those ways are yet, but it is definitely not slated for removal anymore, that's wonderful. And that's not the first time that that has happened.
William's called in from Williamstown. William, do you have a favourite tree?
G'day. Yeah, I'm ringing to let you know that there is a tree that's worth hugging near the tip of Point Jellybrand. And when Whitefella turned up in 1843 or so, whenever it was, they described Point Jellybrand as being covered in she oaks. And there's a little cottage near the point of Point Jellybrand that has not been renovated in the last 100 years. and was probably built in the mid-1800s, and there is a magnificent she oak in the backyard. I wouldn't be surprised if it's a remnant of what was here, you know, coming up 200 years ago. So a magnificent thing, worth protecting.
Thank you. I'm so glad that what we're talking about today is hugging trees. We've had two people talking about hugging trees, and I'm really glad. We've got Rob, who's called in from Roeville in the leafy east of Melbourne. Rob, you wanted to talk about a tree in a park, in a public park.
Yeah, in Jembrook Park, there's a giant mountain ash there, and arborists have estimated it's around 250 to 300 years old.
Wow.
So it's fantastic just to look up it and think, yeah, it was growing before a European settlement. But I'm also an advocate of hugging trees as well. And people might not realise on a windy day, and you've got to look up, make sure there's no dead limbs, but to hug a big tree, a big straight tree on a windy day, they actually move. It might be a centimetre, just a micro amount.
Oh, wow.
And the ground actually heaves under your feet. Almost every big tall tree will do it. So if you wrap your arms around a tree, you can actually feel this giant tree actually moving and with you, and you move with it when you're hugging it. It's an unreal feeling, like, you know, to grasp something, a living thing so big and move with it. But you wouldn't notice it to look at it. You've actually got to wrap your arms around it.
What an amazing thing to describe. Thank you so much for calling in with that, Rob. We're joined by Catherine Mazialanis, who's the Environmental Advocate for National Trust of Victoria, on the Conversation Hour on ABC Radio. Catherine, you're calling for Victorians to get in contact with their Tree of the Year nominations, and the nominations are open till the end of August. What happens then? Do they go to battle? Is that a hug competition? Like, how do you select finalists and winners there?
I love the idea of hug competition. I think we should all do that so much more. And it's been wonderful just hearing how connected people are to trees as well, because I think that often gets lost in the discussion.
Oh, absolutely.
So once we have all our nominations in, then our expert committee has a look at all of those, and they have the very, very difficult job of shortlisting that down to 9 finalists.
Wow.
And then we open up the voting to the public, provide a bit of information about each tree, and you can vote for your personal favourite on there.
Aww.
So, yeah, that's how it works. And then the winner is announced at the end of October.
Well, we'll look forward to hearing more about that. We've got Amanda, who's joined us now in Kensington. Amanda, do you have a favourite tree?
I'm ringing up about the big tree in Guildford, which is a little town in between Daylesford and Castlemaine, when I used to live nearby. And I used to go to the general store and get my coffee and have a little seat down there. And it's pretty famous in the area, as it's called the Big Tree. And I think it's about 10 metres in circumference.
Wow,
and,
big.
Yeah, it's massive. And it's been there, I don't know how old it is, but it's very well known in the area. People sit under it, people play music under it.
I love that idea of a tree being kind of like a local celebrity, like everyone knows about the tree, everyone visits the tree. It's a bit of a local celebrity in that area. Is that right, Amanda?
Yeah, it's a river red gum.
Oh, beautiful. They're lovely trees.
So it's gorgeous, and it is, as I say, very, very well known in that area. And, yeah, I just thought it was a lovely thing to ring in and talk about. And I love that you're talking about trees, because I think they're so wonderful in our lives.
I think they're pretty wonderful too. I think that's probably the least controversial thing you'll hear on this radio station all day. Trees are wonderful. I wanted to thank you so much for calling in, Amanda.
I wanted to
read out some of the texts we've had coming in. People's favourite trees. Jane in Hawthorne says she likes to stop and admire a beautiful tree when I'm out walking. Trees, like animals, are often undervalued. Someone else texting in, say they grew up in Flemington, which we haven't actually heard a lot from the inner suburbs of Melbourne yet. We've heard a bit from the kind of leafy eastern down Williamstown way, but Flemington, adjacent to the then vacant open land around the Mooney Ponds Creek, and there are some trees around there. Jenny says there's a Mount Beckworth a tree atop Mount Beckworth near Clunes. So regional Victoria getting a good look in today with the trees. And we heard earlier, I'm getting so many texts, they keep coming through, but about the trees that are threatened in the Edinburgh Gardens in North Fitzroy in the inner city. So, yeah, it's a particular pain, isn't it, when trees are under threat. So we're joined by Catherine Mazialanis, who's the environmental advocate with the National Trust of Victoria. Catherine, what do you make of all these texts and calls that we're getting? We've got a lot of passion coming through. Does it surprise you?
Honestly, no. It's the kind of thing that people do get very, very passionate about. And I think we see that time and time again when trees are under threat. I often have people ring me up who are really distressed about the removal of trees. And that's part of the reason that we're trying to advocate for their protection, is that there are some legal protections, but they are not consistent and they don't necessarily apply to significant trees. The government announced last year that there was a 30% canopy target in the planning scheme, and we're like, yes, that's fantastic. But let's see, you know, these special ones, the ones that people really care about, protected as well. Because a new tree is not the same as an existing tree.
Absolutely not. We've heard about some very big trees. We've got more people who have called in. Graham's called in from Bond Beach. What did you want to tell us, Graham?
Yes, good morning. I'm just generalising now. I've seen a lot of trees in the world. I've travelled all over the world. I've travelled all over Australia, and no countries have the better and variety of trees we don't. I specifically love gum trees, the flowering ones, all of them in general. We've got around 850 species of gum trees in Australia. That's quite incredible, of any tree.
Wow.
Travelling down the west coast of Australia, if someone doesn't like a gum tree, travel down there. And as you go through the variety, or as you go through the area, each, I don't know what it is, 20, 50 Ks, you see a total change in colour. It's just magnificent to see our gums in full flight. It's a beautiful sight.
It really is.
I could go on and on about our trees, shrubs, variety. Our native plants, varieties are magnificent. No country could beat them.
Thank you, Graham. Thanks for your call. Mark's joined us from Thomastown. And Mark, I'm so glad you have, because Melbourne's outer north, I reckon, has some of the most incredible trees. Which one did you want to tell us about? Do you have a favourite tree?
Yes. One that I noticed quite a few years ago, actually, there's a beautiful, huge eucalyptus tree at Roxburgh Village that they've actually built around.
Oh.
So they've planted around this tree, and I'm just so glad they left it there, you know.
I love it when trees become part of our lives. Either you the shopping centre has to incorporate it into the car park, or, you know, things pop up around it. Our life pops up around trees. Thank you so much, Mark, for the call. And thank you, Catherine Mazialanis, who's the environmental advocate with the National Trust of Victoria. Thanks so much for your time this morning.
Delighted. Thank you so much.
Coming up on The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio, do you know what to do if you hit an animal when you're driving?
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Margaret Paul.
Well, do you know what to do if you hit an animal when you're driving in your car? It's estimated about 10 million animals are killed on Australian roads each year, and Wildlife Victoria is recording an increase of nearly 300% in wildlife-related vehicle collisions over the past decade. It's happened to me. I hit a kangaroo at dusk when I was driving on the roads outside Broken Hill about 15 years ago now, but I didn't report it other than to my friends at the pub. Call in and let me know. Text in, let me know. What have you done in that situation? Have you hit an animal when you're driving? Would you know what to do? Wildlife Victoria is joining with the RSPCA and the Invasive Species Council to call for mandatory reporting of wildlife road strikes. To talk more about this, we're joined by Lisa Palmer, who's the CEO of Wildlife Victoria. Thanks for joining us, Lisa.
Thanks for having me, Margaret.
Now, that's a really significant number of animals that are hit by cars, 10 million animals a year. Mm. What's causing that increase? That's a lot.
So what we're seeing is a big driver of wildlife road collisions, Margaret, are really three things, but primarily urbanisation. So as our human population's growing and we're building housing estates and road infrastructure and other infrastructure in what is traditionally wildlife habitat, we are, of course, seeing much more human wildlife interaction, and that's been a real driver for wildlife road trauma here in Victoria.
I think I read earlier that the outer suburbs of Melbourne, particularly Hume, I know Hume City Council, kind of on the northwestern outer fringe of the city of Melbourne, has had a real problem, haven't they, with that new urban area and the interface with that animal habitat, and it's leading to a lot of animal strikes in that it's the fringe areas, isn't it, the outer city.
Yeah, and look, in fact, in Victoria, the top five councils for significant wildlife road trauma, no surprises, will Macedon Ranges, Hume, Whittlesea, Yarra Ranges and Nillimbik. So all of those locations are within proximity of a lot of development, a lot of infrastructure, a lot of housing. And look, it is avoidable. There are ways to incorporate wildlife considerations into development and planning, and certainly we're advocating that the state government takes a more active role in doing that.
Yeah, because it's good to talk about what happens if people hit an animal, but of course the better course of action is to not have that happen to start with. I noticed up in Sydney there was a 30-metre wide bridge over the Mona Vale Road in out of Sydney so that animals can safely cross. Because we've got, I think down the way to Gippsland, there's those kind of rope ladders that the possums can get across, but a really wide bridge over a road is something that you can see in Sydney. So what else can be done in terms of infrastructure here in Victoria?
So there's a few things, and really it's about ensuring that there is a corridor for wildlife. So you mentioned, Margaret, you know, things like rope bridges, overpasses, also underpasses. And it's been our experience that it's really a range of interventions that are most effective. And you'll be familiar, as will most of your listeners, with those traditional diamond-shaped yellow signs with a kangaroo or koala in them. We know that they're just not effective. People are used to them and not taking notice of them. But things like variable messaging signage that says koalas up ahead or slow down or things like that, where it's much more dynamic, and there's the technology in place now to enable more notification of where wildlife might be crossing. And speed limits, of course, are a big one.
Absolutely, and it's a really good way of reminding people to keep an eye out if they are on the roads. We've got a text that's come in saying, I have the animal rescue number on my phone, but also a fairly heavy iron bar in the door of my car, which is quite a graphic thing to be keeping in the car. I'd like to ask you, Lisa Palmer, the CEO of Wildlife Victoria, what should people do? What's required of people if they do hit an animal in the car?
So I think it's important to understand we're very lucky here in Victoria. So Wildlife Victoria is 24/7, 2 a.m. on Christmas morning, midnight, whenever it is. Please pick up the phone and give us a call. Our emergency response operator, on receipt of your call, will triage the call. They'll make sure you're safe. They'll understand what's going on. And each case, I have to say, is very, very different, Margaret. So hitting a kookaburra versus a wombat, a kangaroo or an emu are quite different situations, and also depending on the injury of the animal. But in most cases, we'll dispatch a trained wildlife rescuer or one of our vets, usually, sadly, to humanely euthanise the animal and check the pouch for pouch young as well.
Should people keep things in the back of the car to prepare for a situation like that?
We definitely encourage that people do keep some basic items in their cars. So obviously save the number in your phone, 84007300 for Wildlife Victoria, but also very handy to have the disposable gloves that you can buy in most supermarkets, and also a pillowcase. So, you know, if you do find a gorgeous little kangaroo joey or wombat joey that's uninjured, you've got some way to safely contain that animal while taking it to a vet.
But so, I think it's important to say too, you mentioned to call first, call that number, because I know we've been hearing a lot on this radio station about bird flu as well. So you wouldn't want to be, you know, picking something up without knowing, and I guess, you know, for the animal's health as much as for your own.
Yep, that's right, Margaret. And look, Wildlife Victoria is a charity. We're not a government agency, but we engage on a daily basis with government agencies in wildlife response. So we're up to date with what's going on all across the state, and we adapt and adjust our protocols accordingly. So very important for humans to be safe as well as our wildlife.
Wonderful. And you're calling for mandatory reporting. What would that do? Why is that important?
Yeah, so mandatory reporting, and what we mean by mandatory reporting is if you do hit an animal while driving, that you notify somebody about that. And that might be as simple as a call to Wildlife Victoria or the local police. But mandatory reporting will do a few things. So firstly, ensuring that wildlife are not left suffering unnecessarily, left to bleed to death over several hours graphically. But it will enable comprehensive data collection. So government agencies and road managers will be able to identify the highest risk locations and develop targeted solutions that protect both wildlife and motorists. And we talked about some of those: overpasses, underpasses, speed limits, variable signage. We can also use that data to track and manage the impact of invasive animal species like deer.
Oh, absolutely.
On road users, yeah, and help state and local governments and other land managers reduce their impact. But, you know, it's also about keeping us safe, the drivers safe, and knowing that rather than taking matters into your own hands, there's help at hand when you report it.
And I guess you're not able to respond to that if you don't have a really good picture of where those accidents are happening, where the gaps are. I want to go quickly to, we're joined by Govinda, who wants to talk about ringtail possums. What did you want to tell us about, Govinda?
Yeah, so, hi, good afternoon. Good morning, still, sorry. Just pointing out that I'm a postie, so I'm always on the road, and I found so many ringtail possums dead just underneath the power lines.
Oh.
It makes me so angry and so sad at the same time. So I don't know if it's a problem of the negligence from the power line companies. They're not taking care of the land around it.
Lisa Palmer, is there anything any light you can shed on that issue of ringtail possums underneath power lines?
Yeah, so ringtail possums are a species that we commonly have suffer electrocution. And really what's going on there is ringtail possums are tree-dwelling species. They're nocturnal, and they will regularly use power lines to get from A to B. So really, habitat loss is a key reason that we're seeing our wildlife get into trouble, and they're using artificial structures like power lines to cross roads when really they would be using the treetops. So we see that where there's a lot of tree removal, a lot of habitat loss, there's a direct correlation with not just issues like electrocution in certain places, but road trauma as well.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks for your call, Govinda. We've got some texts that are reflecting that issue as well. We've got Helen's texted in to say Queensland's got many of those wildlife bridges, but also tunnels under the highways where animals can safely cross the roads. And also someone else has texted in to say they keep a can of spray paint in the car so that they can mark animals that they've checked for the pouch young. Lisa Palmer, who's the CEO of Wildlife Victoria, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me, Margaret.
Coming up on the Conversation Hour, we're asking, what is hygiene poverty and why is it on the rise in Victoria?
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is the Conversation Hour.
You're with Margaret Paul.
Good morning. We've got a very significant day in state politics today. I've got a statement from Ben Carroll that I'll read to you now. I'm reading it off the screen, so it's a statement from Ben Carroll, who's the Deputy Premier of Victoria. And he says, a group of my colleagues have approached me today to inform me that Jacinta Allen no longer has the support of our caucus and have asked me to nominate for the position of Victorian Parliamentary Labor Party, the leadership, rather, of the Victorian Parliamentary Labor Party. It is clear that the Premier has lost the majority of our caucus. As such, I have since visited the Premier to inform her that I will be nominating for the leadership of the Labor Party. This decision is not easy, but the stakes at the upcoming election are simply too high. The prospect of a Liberal One Nation government that will cut schools, health and frontline services is simply too high a risk to ignore. So that's a statement that's just come in from Ben Carroll. We will be keeping you up to date on anything that happens in state politics, but listen to ABC Radio across the day because it really has been one of those days where things are happening a lot faster than they have been. But at the moment, we're going to be talking about hygiene poverty. Have you heard of hygiene poverty? A new report's found more than 5.5 million people across Australia, that's about 20% of us, have skipped personal hygiene and cleaning products in the past year because they can't afford them. You can imagine the consequences of that, right? 1 in 3 people have avoided social situations, felt embarrassed, ashamed, or experienced mental health impacts, and nearly 1 in 4 people have delayed a doctor or a dental appointment. Joining us now is Alison Covington, who's the founder and managing director of Good 360 Australia. Alison, thank you for joining us today.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm very well. This is the most comprehensive study looking at hygiene poverty. Why did you want to study hygiene poverty?
I think it's really important for people to understand what it is. We've been doing this now for 3 years and the statistics are showing it's getting worse, not better. And hygiene poverty is when you're going out without the basic essentials like shampoo, deodorant, toothbrush, toothpaste. Most of us would take that for granted, but as you said, those statistics are actually very big numbers of Australians who can't take that for granted.
And what is it doing to people? What is it doing to people's lives? They're probably changing the way they interact, maybe leaving the house less.
Yeah, so I describe it as, you know, imagine, you know, your toothpaste is running out and, you know, it's days before your next paycheck. Imagine going to work, imagine going to school or sending your children to school without being able to brush their teeth and the stigma that you would feel socially or, you know, not having access to deodorant. You know, it's really tough on people, but it's happening to more people, to everyday Australians who didn't have this problem, you know, a few years ago, but we've come off the back of, you know, COVID, cost of living crisis. And as you're seeing, the statistics in Victoria are worse than the national average. So your announcement just recently about the leader in Victoria says that, you know, something's gone wrong in Victoria and more people are actually suffering than the national average.
What can be done about it? What can governments and businesses do to help reduce hygiene poverty, Alison?
So we've got a call out to get 1 million hygiene items. As you said, there's 5 million people in Australia, but we're asking businesses and governments to work with Good 360 so that we can distribute those to over 5,000 charities across the country, get them into communities, get them into schools, because as I said, it's worse, not better. So we have to take a collaborative action together, but also the everyday Australian. If you're hearing this and you feel you want to take some action, a $25 donation will help 2 people with hygiene items for a month. So there's lots we can all do if we collaborate and help, you know, fellow Australians.
It sounds like there's a lot people can do. So, and I hear also that it's affecting women more than men. Why is that?
Yeah, and I think that, you know, statistically, sorry, that's a word, we're seeing more women, you know, in cases of homelessness and domestic violence, but we're seeing that poverty tends to affect women and children more. But we're also seeing some really interesting and scary statistics around students. So it's affecting students as well more than the national average. So young people, people who are renting, single parents, you know, it's pretty tough out there for quite a large cohort of Australians.
Is there something that governments can do?
Yeah, so, you know, they are supporting with some areas around food insecurity. We're asking them to extend this support into hygiene items. Imagine if you can't afford to put food on the table, having these hygiene items is an extra luxury that you have to make choice behind. So we're asking government for support there, and again, businesses. And just to raise the knowledge about this, so thank you this morning, because I'm sure a lot of your listeners wouldn't have realised that people are going without toothpaste and deodorant in a country like ours.
does.
Toothpaste and deodorant are certainly essential items, so thanks for bringing it to our attention. That's Alison Covington, who's the founder and managing director of Good360 Australia. Thanks for your company this morning. Mary Geeran will be back with you tomorrow, and you can listen back on the Conversation Hour podcast. But we've been having a lovely time this morning talking about Victorian politics, hygiene, poverty, and also your favourite trees and what to do if you get into an accident with wildlife. So thanks for joining me. Mary Geeran back with you tomorrow on Conversation Hour.